Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Hey friends, and welcome to this episode of The Canby Current. I am your host, James Walton. Let's read the news. Canby School District Superintendent Tripp Goodall will be stepping down when his contract expires at the end of June, he announced in a message to families on Wednesday. Goodall did not give a reason for his decision to leave Canby. He had served as superintendent of the district of more than 4,700 students for the past 7 years. Working in Canby has been a highlight of my career, Goodall wrote. I am very proud of what we have accomplished together. I have met some extraordinary people, both in and outside of our schools. People care deeply about Canby, myself included. He went on to say he has appreciated the encouragement, advice, and support many district families had extended over the past 7 years. I simply want to say thank you, Goodall said. I have enjoyed being your superintendent in ways you probably do not know. Thank you, community members, parents, students, and staff. Your advocacy for our students and for the district has made all the difference. Canby is a community that shows time and again a strong commitment to its youth. For that, I will be forever grateful and proud of my time at Canby. No doubt, Goodall's most recent year as superintendent will be particularly memorable for reasons that go beyond the community of Canby. Like all school officials and staff throughout the state, Goodall and his team have had to contend with the previously unimaginable challenges of the coronavirus pandemic, which forced students out of public school classrooms for almost a full calendar year. As if that weren't enough, Canby has also grappled with historic wildfires last September and the destructive ice storms of several weeks ago, which made even remote learning impossible due to widespread power outages and evacuations. The pressure to return children to in-person learning has only mounted in the first 2 months of 2021 following new guidance by Governor Kate Brown and the Oregon Department of Education that placed reopening decisions back in the hands of local school boards and administrators. The district, and sometimes Goodall himself, have been targets of criticism by some parents and community members who feel they are moving too slowly and incrementally, making themselves heard in public comments at school board meetings and the Facebook group Open Canby Schools, which demands an immediate reopening. Just this week, the Canby School District welcomed back its youngest students for a hybrid schedule offering 2 half-days of in-person learning each week, which critics say is not enough. Middle school and high school students are scheduled to gradually return in the weeks to come. In January, criticism of Goodall escalated into 2 formal complaints, one of them by a member of the Canby School Board, Stephanie Carlson, who denounced his handling of a social media comment by Carlson that had concerned some community members and sparked 4 other formal complaints. Though the board last month declined to investigate any of the 6 complaints, they remain pending for further discussion in executive session and possible action at its next meeting Thursday night. I remain focused on the challenging work ahead, Goodall concluded in his letter. I am committed to serving all of you through the end of this school year and will support the district as it transitions to a new leader. I look forward to our continued partnership over the next 4 months. Oregon, along with the three other members of the Western States Scientific Safety Review Work Group tasked with reviewing COVID-19 vaccines to ensure safety, has approved a third vaccine produced by an American pharmaceutical company, Johnson & Johnson, for emergency use. In a press conference, Governor Kate Brown and the three other state leaders said the group completed its review of the new vaccine Tuesday night, determining it is safe and effective. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine is the third immunization for the novel coronavirus to be sanctioned in Oregon. However, unlike the first vaccine produced by Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson's does not have to be stored at ultra-cold temperatures, although the FDA recently relaxed its guidelines in that regard. And most critically, the new vaccine requires only a single dose. Both therapies previously approved for emergency public use require two doses for full efficacy. At least 34,000 doses are expected to be delivered to Oregon later this week, Brown said. After thorough scientific review by doctors and health experts, we now have three safe and effective vaccines available for Oregonians, the governor said in the joint statement. And because the Johnson & Johnson vaccine can be stored in standard refrigerators and vaccinate individuals in a single dose, it gives us the ability to vaccinate even more people. We will work to distribute vaccines as quickly and equitably as possible as we move forward to vaccinate seniors, people with underlying health conditions, frontline workers, and all Oregonians. It's not clear if the news will move up the schedule announced by Brown last month, which had targeted July 1st as the date by which the vaccine would be available to all adults who want to take it. The United States has been following a similar schedule until this week when President Joe Biden moved the country's timeline ahead 2 months because of the additional supplies promised by Johnson & Johnson. To date, Oregon has distributed just over 1 million doses of the COVID vaccine, with more than 636,000 Oregonians having received at least the first of the two-shot series. The Green Planet, a small chain of marijuana retail dispensaries with locations in Milwaukee, King City, Beaverton, and others, has opened their newest store at the former Topo Hill restaurant between Canby and Aurora. And if they're not workshopping the motto, "High on the Hill," we think they're doing something wrong. The store, which first opened last February for CBD-only sales just before the onset of the coronavirus pandemic, has faced enormous challenges. Its initial opening was delayed by the unexpected death of one of the company's three owners and founders, Justin West, in July of 2019. Then there was the aforementioned pandemic, you may have heard of it, and the impact it had on state licensing and certification. If that wasn't enough, the store finally opened for recreational marijuana sales on Friday, February 12th, hours before one of the most destructive ice storms in state history pummeled the region. The lights came back on a couple of days later, and Murray says the new store has been rocking ever since. For decades, Topo Hill was a beloved local diner, particularly for residents in the vast rural areas surrounding Canby and Aurora. The restaurant closed in 2016 after 90 years in business when the then owner retired. The Green Planet team purchased it the following year for approximately $600,000, according to county records. The historic building needs lots of work, Murray said, as the new owners transformed the quaint, homey interior into a modern showroom with a wide-open floor plan. All three of the Green Planet's owners grew up in the Oregon City and Canby area, Murray said, and were proud to be able to open their first store in an area they still hold dear. But for this particular location, West and Murray have an even more personal connection. "My late husband and I had our first date there," she said. "I was working in Wilsonville and he lived in Woodburn. We decided to meet there and grab some food. That was over 20 years ago. Opening this store without him was bittersweet," she admitted. "He was alive when we purchased and completed the renovations," she said, "but the OLCC took longer than we hoped and I had to open it without him. I hope he's proud of me. We should have been able to be there together." Murray said the Green Planet strives to offer an atmosphere for both customers and employees that is welcoming and safe for all. It's not just a business to us, she said. It's a family. We're all co-workers in this company. No one stands above any other. From the bud tenders to the managers to the corporate staff and to the owners, where we go together, and we all help each other out. The Green Planet Canby is located at 25496 South Highway 99E and is open from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. daily. A joint emergency board of the Oregon legislature tasked with allocating federal coronavirus relief funds is making $100 million available for a new program providing financial assistance to small businesses and commercial landlords impacted by the economic hardships caused by the pandemic. The program offers grants of up to $100,000 per tenant to building owners to cover outstanding lease payments from small business tenants that are behind on rent due to COVID-19. The landlord must agree not to evict the tenant for 6 months and waive any rights to collect outstanding penalties or interest or enforce eviction clauses related to the delinquent lease payments between March 1, 2020 and February 28, 2021. This new funding comes at a critical time to bring small businesses out of accumulated debt caused by the pandemic, Business Oregon Interim Director Chris Cummings said in a press release. With improving COVID-19 numbers and us all doing our part to curb the spread, we can get businesses operating again. This program lets them get going with less weight on their shoulders. The program is intended to help small business tenants that have 100 or fewer employees. The agreement will include additional protections for tenants, such as non-eviction clauses and a waiver of penalties and interest. The program will open for applications on Monday, March 8th. Both the business tenant and the property owner will need to participate in the application process and sign the grant agreement, but the initial application needs to be completed by the landlord. The application period will also be open for 2 weeks, with eligible submissions chosen by a lottery system that will ensure geographic distribution across all regions of the state. The program is split into two rounds, with the first $50 million being allocated in the application period that opens next week. The remaining funds will be used in an additional application period that opens in late April. Unsuccessful but still eligible applicants from the first round will automatically be considered in the second round, as will any new round two applicants. This is the seventh COVID-specific program Business Oregon has implemented to help small businesses navigate the impacts of the pandemic. The state says the Emergency Small Business Grant Program alone has helped about 7,500 small businesses with $43 million in grants to help offset revenue impacts from COVID-19. For more information and eligibility details, visit Business Oregon's website at oregon4biz.com. That's the Oregon, the number 4, B-I-Z.com. For many residents within Canby city limits, the two-day blackout was more than enough. But if not for a quirk of city planning, a little luck, and a lot of hard work, it might have taken days longer. Canby Utility actually began seeing short interruptions on Thursday, February 11th, during the first and far less damaging wave of wintry weather that gave only a small taste of the destruction that was to come. The utility knew the storm was coming in, and they were carefully monitoring its progress. Canby Utility began having problems at about 7 p.m. Friday, February 12th. The Westcott substation, the larger of the utility's two substations, was the first to go down, taking Fred Meyer, the industrial park, and the eastern half of the city offline. The Knightsbridge substation went dark soon after. Both outages were due to trees down on the Portland General Electric transmission lines that serve the two substations. In the words of General Manager Dan Murphy, "With that, I experienced something for the first time in my career, a power outage that took out 100% all of our customers. Nobody had power whatsoever beginning about 8 o'clock or so, and that was not a good feeling, I'll tell you, to realize that we'd lost all of our customers. From there, conditions only worsened throughout the night with sheets of misting rain that accumulated into thick, heavy layers of ice on lines and tree limbs, eventually reaping massive damage throughout the President's Day weekend. PGE estimated the extra ice added on average more than 1,000 pounds to each span of line throughout the region. Numerous poles, crossbars, and feeder lines were damaged, including ones delivering power from both Cambie utility substations. It was also a memorable night for the Cambie Fire District and other first responders. The city mobilized a partial emergency operations center Friday night. Cambie Fire called back all off-duty personnel and put all three medical crews into service. Firefighters and emergency medical technicians were working, in some cases, 72 to 96 hour shifts, unable to get a break even for sleep due to the unrelenting demand for medical services. Cambie Fire received over 3,000 calls for emergency service in a 24-hour period. Many of the calls for service reported power outages and lines down, which, you know, join the club, right? But others were more serious. One building had to be evacuated due to smoke, while six had to be pulled from a Cambie apartment complex because of a potential carbon monoxide poisoning. One of the most pressing early issues was residents with compressed oxygen devices unable to recharge their batteries. And of course, emergencies unrelated to the storm continued, including two consecutive cardiac arrests Saturday night, both of whom died. At one point on the 13th, we had 29 calls pending, Cambie Fire Chief Jim Davis recalled. We were literally taking those calls and prioritizing one call after another. We had five or six ambulances lined up at Willamette Falls Hospital with patients waiting to go into the emergency room. The medical center itself experienced a main break at one point, and all but the most critical patients had to be rerouted elsewhere, Davis said. Fire and police worked together to clear a blockage on Barnard's Road that was affecting emergency response, while both had to contend with a train that stalled on the tracks Friday night, blocking most of Cambie's railroad crossings. As officials learned in daylight, a major transmission line near Highway 99E in the Malala Forest Logging Road Trail overpass had fallen and was lying on the train. Oh, Saturday morning, we found a real mess, Murphy recalled. With significant damage to our overhead electric lines throughout the cities, we had all hands on deck. Although the two substations had not been turned back on by PGE and could not restore power to customers until that happened, Cambie utility crews swing into action repairing city infrastructure in preparation for the juice to start flowing again. It was a waiting game, and Cambie utility crews took advantage, getting as much done as they could until PGE could restore power to at least one of their substations. They hoped that it would be Westcott, the newest substation, which was, some critics said at the time, overbuilt because of the expected demand from the industrial park one day. Due to this wishful thinking, Westcott was built with more than twice the capacity of Knights Bridge. Luckily, Westcott was the first to come back online, with Cambie Utility getting the notification from PGE at approximately 5 p.m. Sunday. And, true to the Cambie Utility engineers' estimates, the Westcott substation did indeed prove capable of delivering power to virtually all of Cambie Utility's customers inside the city, all by itself. The small handful, 59 or so households, that remained without power as of 10 p.m. was not because of a lack of capacity, but rather damage on the homeowner's private property that required extra attention. The Knights Bridge substation, on the other hand, was not restored until Wednesday. If Knights Bridge had come back first, about half the city would have still been without power for several more days, Murphy said. Murphy praised local partners, including Cambie Fire, police, public works, and other city leaders, and Cambie Utility's own crews. Our field personnel worked long hours and in extreme conditions with dogged determination to ease the discomfort we knew the community was under, Murphy said. You know, the very best comes out in utility workers under the worst conditions, and this storm was no exception to that. Murphy also thanked PGE, which he said went truly above and beyond to get Cambie back online. It was obvious to me they made Cambie a priority, that they knew they could make the greatest impact by getting our city up, and they actually put us before even their own customers, he said. Aw, man, they really came through for us. Like many other city leaders, Murphy noted how proud he was of Cambie and the way the community pulled together to weather yet another crisis. We have great people, he said. It's a great community. People really care about each other and they step up for each other. The entire community worked this storm together. Everybody pulling in the same direction, organizations and people, our neighbors, all of us. It's humbling to know just how good Canby is. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Thanks for listening to the news on this episode of the Canby Current.
Stay connected to what matters most this winter with unlimited high-speed internet from DirectLink. While things may look a little different this year, as we all work together to keep everyone as safe and healthy as possible, you can be confident that DirectLink's reliable network will keep your video calls, Snapchats, stories, and photos crystal clear and at your fingertips whenever you need them. In 2021, DirectLink is thankful for all of their amazing members and is proud to be your local internet, video, and voice provider for over 116 years. All right, joining us in the Canby Conversation today is one of the busiest people in town, Mr. Kyle Lang of the Canby Area Chamber. How are you?
I'm doing well, Frankie. Thank you.
Good. Kyle, I have this very vivid memory of almost exactly 1 year ago, and we're going to be talking about the auction, but right. We had no idea. We were so blissfully unaware of what was coming. We were doing an interview about the annual auction that was going to come up. It was just around the corner, and it was, I mean, looking back, I think it was just like a week or two before everything started going nuts. We're now 1 year into this pandemic, which obviously has been a public health thing, but has had such an impact on businesses, particularly small, local, and independent businesses, of which you work with quite a bit.
Yes.
How are you doing after a year of this? How are you feeling when you reflect just what things go through your head? How are you holding up?
Well, I mean, it's a complicated question, right? So I'm a father of a school-age child. I'm the executive director of a business membership organization. I'm an extrovert with introvert tendencies. So on multiple levels, some is really great. There's been so many blessings that have come out of this last year. And there's been so many challenges that have come out of this last year that it's almost hard to puzzle out.
Yeah, yeah. I felt like for a second there, we were like on a blind date or something. You're like, I am an
artist. Did you not
read
my Tinder profile?
Right? That's how you ended up here, right? I swiped right. So we do have the auction coming up. I want you to tell us a little bit about that. You're doing it virtually.
We are doing it virtually. Like typically it's the annual gala and auction. And actually, we're live now, as of this moment with the auction. And the event will end at 5 p.m. on Saturday. And we'll actually be broadcasting live across CTV, YouTube, and Facebook Live to close down the auction on Saturday. It feels a little interesting to not have the kind of the pomp and circumstance of the gala portion and to just have the auction portion.
You had to keep your costume trunk closed for another year or?
Oh, that's what the broadcast on Saturday about. Okay. At 4 p.m.
We'll get to that.
We'll broadcast from 4 p.m.
Yeah.
And I have two this year.
Yeah.
So.
You know, like wear them one on top of each other and you Superman it and kind of rip it open or we'll see.
TBD.
Right.
TBD. Right.
Yeah. Just make sure you don't get confused where you wind up with just your bare chest and like, wait, I forgot to put it on.
Exactly.
Tell folks
what
that
is about. And then I'll be canceled.
Right. They're all getting canceled.
Right.
So tell folks what that is about, the clothes that's going to be broadcast through CTV.
Yeah. So we'll go live across CTV5 here in the community for those who have DirectLink or Wave. And then we'll be on Facebook Live and YouTube Live at the same time. And that broadcast is sponsored by Diane Harbeck and Bobby Bryan of Better Homes and Gardens.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
And
people.
So they'll join me on camera. We'll talk about what's still up for grabs. We'll talk about our sponsors. And we will give out our President's Award and our Community Caring Award.
Awesome.
At that time, because that's an annual tradition that we really didn't want to get lost in not having the gala.
Yeah.
Was to say thank you and to recognize those people in our community that have stepped up and gone above and beyond in this last year. It felt specifically important to do that this year.
Yeah, absolutely. As far as that award goes, and also just the, you know, getting donations and sponsors, I imagine that must have been a little you know, having seen so much of the challenge that folks are under, and I'm sure you were obviously very sensitive and whatnot in how you approached that, but that must have been tough.
It was tough. Procurement for the auction was a sensitive situation. And so we decided actually to like pivot this year and do our Two Birds, One Stone campaign, which was for those businesses that felt like they had done well over the course of 2020. It gave them the opportunity to donate to the chamber via cash donation. And what we did is we promised to spend every single dollar in local businesses in the community. And we were going to buy gift cards from local businesses in the community and then put those gift cards in the auction and sell those gift cards at cash value.
Yeah.
So basically, their exact cash contribution went to a local business, but is actually also funding the chamber. So therefore, two birds, one stone.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So that was a way. So we spent almost $4,000 in local businesses.
Wow.
And supported over 35 local businesses through that effort.
Yeah.
And just made the cash register ring. I mean, the chamber's mission is to support the local economy and to support small business. Now, we were also kind of rewarded, and we would walk in to spend this money in local businesses, and then they would donate on top.
Yeah.
And kind of no matter how much you insist or, you know, try to say, no, I'm trying to do this for you.
Yeah.
Their generosity couldn't be denied. So we were awesome. Overwhelmed kind of by the response.
Yeah. That's very cool. Can you, maybe you can't reveal, I'm sure you can't actually, the presidential awards, but can you tell us, even without naming names, or just give us a sense of some of the stories that have really kind of inspired you and encouraged you about the way businesses have toughed it out, have helped each other through this difficult year?
So there's two awards, the Community Caring Award and the President's Award. And in there was multiple organizations and individuals nominated for each. And in community conversations, like, please, can you recognize X? Can you recognize Y?
Yeah.
And it was I've been here three galas now, and we've never had this much dialogue. We've never had this much passionate advocacy for people's winning candidate as we have had this year.
Right.
And
which you wouldn't necessarily expect, right? I mean, you would expect there to be a lot more maybe in a really, really good year, maybe. Right. Like not necessarily in a down year where some businesses were even teetering on the edge at points and whatnot, you know.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think that they would channel that into these are the people that helped me out, you know, like kind of wanting to share that story out of gratitude.
Right.
But that's what you've seen.
That's part of the like conflicting nature of like, how do I feel over the, you know, how am I doing today?
Yeah.
This year, 2020 was hard. The last year was hard for the chamber, for the local economy, for everybody. But I've heard so many amazing testimonials to my neighbor, to this public civic department, to this not-for-profit, to this individual. I have seen so many gestures of goodwill, so many neighborly, value-driven actions mm-hmm. that have taken place across the course of this year, that it's really hard to not be kind of bolstered up by it.
Yeah.
And to retain your optimism over where we are as a community, because there's so many things, there's so many contentious moments that maybe we focus on, that sometimes these brighter moments, these neighborly moments, mm-hmm. these optimistic and bright moments get lost in the yeah. noise. And I guess I'm blessed to be in a position where I get to hear a lot of these positive stories
yeah.
in the midst of, you know, all the newsworthy
yeah.
stories as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah. I know one thing that I have been reflecting on in the past year quite a bit with everything that's been, you know, the multiple crises that just keep compounding and,
right.
and happening is that when things are really hard, when you're kind of at your in the end of your rope, the actions can be so magnified at that point, whether it's something positive or negative, you know, something that somebody says, maybe even not, you know, meaning to be mean necessarily, but can have such more of an impact, or the tiniest gesture of kindness can just change a whole day, you know, which is, you know, something that's kind of nice about those moments, as bad as they are, that you can really make a big impact on someone just by showing a little kindness.
Right.
Yeah.
And this year has kind of taught me to develop the skill of considering where people are at mm-hmm. and from where they speak. I don't know that that was necessarily my strongest skill set. Mm. Going into the beginning of 2020.
Yeah.
But coming out the backside and where we're at now, like, even if I encounter something that is contentious or off the cuff, or, you know, that I question whether it's positive or negative, or
right.
I feel like is incredibly negative, I kind of pause and step back for a moment and actually try and consider, from where does this person sit,
yeah.
and from where do they speak? And it, and if you pause and consider that for a moment, like, a lot of times things make sense in a way that,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
not being a keyboard warrior
right.
and responding and taking that time to
it does make it easier to empathize, right, when, like, we've all just been through some stuff,
right?
Like,
right.
either are still going through it or have very recently experienced difficult times.
Yep.
It's much easier to think, I wonder if they're going through a hard day right now,
right.
you know, as opposed to if things are generally good, you just maybe think they're a jerk or whatnot.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, really, the persistence and the fortitude of our local business owners and of our members at the Chamber of Commerce has consistently impressed me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Situations where I've really kind of, like, walked into a business being like, oh, are you okay? And
yeah.
they're like, yeah, we're yeah. today's a new day. Yesterday was a bad day. Today's a new day. We're moving on. We're optimistic. We're
right.
turning the page and we're going.
Right.
Yeah, people's fortitude and persistence has our local business owners have modeled that for
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
And so I just try and, like, raise myself up to it.
I am the same way. Like, there have been multiple times where I've kind of come in like, how you doing? You know, like, I'm at a funeral or
right.
something, like,
right.
or like somebody's on hospice or whatnot. And they're like, where, like, that was yesterday. Like, we're
yeah.
like, we're moving on. Yeah.
Right. Carry on. Carry on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally. Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months. Sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that actually segues really well into what I wanted to ask you, or one thing I wanted to ask you, is do you feel, and I don't necessarily want to compare, you know, look how great this is or whatever, but looking at other communities, do you feel like Canby has weathered this difficult time economically, maybe better than others, maybe better than you would expect? I mean, it's obviously not not to say it has not been hard. Obviously, it has been for many
for sure.
businesses, but we didn't really lose a lot of businesses. A few that did close were not necessarily 100% related to the pandemic. You know,
Absolutely.
They had other reasons mm-hmm. For doing that, or just retiring, things like that.
Right.
You can't necessarily say that.
It maybe bumped up a time frame of a retirement, but
yeah.
they were already on the road to retirement.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
those kinds of
yeah.
things.
Yeah.
Right.
And really on whole, you know, we still got all our restaurants, all those kinds of things.
Right.
A lot of other communities can't say that. So do you feel like Canby has done maybe on par, you know, better than maybe some others, or better than you might expect? And if so, why?
First off, absolutely.
Yeah.
We've done better.
Yeah.
I
think so, too. I'll just say, yeah.
yeah.
That's kind of why I asked that. I don't want to be like, no, Canby, it's terrible.
All right. And I am a perpetual optimist, so
yeah.
that never probably would have been my answer anyway. But I do talk to a lot of other chamber directors, and I'm a member of professional associations
yeah.
and Facebook groups with other chamber directors. And
it's been much more grim in
oh,
other
yeah.
communities. Much more grim.
There's a lot of different narratives
yeah.
happening out in the world that are wildly different
yeah.
than what's happening in Canby. We are very fortunate in Canby. The ability to live in Canby... you know, housing is at a price point mm. in Canby that usually connotates a type of job, a level of position within your work life cycle that is generally pretty secure.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of commuters, which means that they can telecommute, mm. which actually retains them in our community instead
yeah.
of driving out of our community.
Yeah.
They're now working from home and
yeah.
actually spending their daytime dollars
yeah.
in the community as opposed to spending it to where they would normally
hmm.
physically commute.
Yeah, that's a really obvious thing that I never thought about until right now. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so, 3/4 of working adults in Canby commute outside the community.
Right. And so if they're
before the pandemic.
If they're telecommuting,
yeah.
they're staying at home,
yeah.
Which poses its own challenge.
Yeah.
But it's different. And so we've retained a lot of these folks in the community, and they're also typically, they've stayed working
mm-hmm.
for the most part, not to say that there's not a
yeah.
different narrative. For the most part, they've stayed working, which means that they have expendable income because they're not traveling. They're not doing some of these, they're not paying for gas,
right.
you know, so they maybe can support a local restaurant or support a retail store. So, I mean, just kind of the demographic makeup of our community has kind of insulated us mm-hmm. from the worst possible consequence yeah. of this last year. And we're very, very fortunate because I have active relationships with chamber directors from communities that look differently than us.
Yeah.
That can't tell that same story.
Yeah. 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 And communities go through different cycles, you know, up and down. And I feel like timing wise, we were kind of on that upswing mm-hmm. to where if we had been maybe at a peak, maybe a little in terms of our business, maybe a little overbuilt than maybe we should have, it might have been a little bit worse than things maybe being even a little bit less than the businesses we needed when an economic downturn hits. That's kind of where you want to be, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, honestly, like within probably the last 3 weeks, I've had three conversations with three different businesses that want to locate. And can be.
Awesome.
Some they're very early on. These mm-hmm. are very preliminary.
Yeah.
But one's a hospitality, one's a retail, and one's an industrial.
Wow.
You know, yeah. And we're seeing a lot of industrial movement across county lines. Mm-hmm. They see Clackamas County as a friendlier metro urban, mm-hmm. suburban location for them to locate their businesses. The momentum of our downtown maintains. There's still energy. There's still dynamics yeah. happening within our downtown
yeah.
that is actually being gravitational mm-hmm. and drawing additional retail hospitality concepts yeah. into our downtown. So, I mean, I receive active calls yeah. of people that, and I think because of COVID, we actually have a pent-up entrepreneurial
yes.
demand.
Yeah.
That people are looking to fill. They yeah. see that opportunity. And so I think we're going to, I think we'll, our bounce out of COVID, I'm optimistic about. That's all I'll say about
yeah.
it. But, you
yeah.
know, I'm optimistic about yeah. How quickly we'll bounce and how far up
yeah.
we'll bounce.
Yeah, yeah. Well, obviously, you're an optimist, as you've said now several times in your conversations with local businesses. Mm-hmm. Are you feeling a sense of optimism or hope as well? I mean, it feels like if you look at the numbers, if you look at the things we recently, you know, actually for two straight cycles now, Clackamas County has moved upward in the state's risk assessment framework.
Right.
Don't know if that'll necessarily go 3 for 3, but we're much better
right.
than that's we where would my have expected.
That's apparently yeah. where my optimism right. ends.
But better than we would have expected right. a month ago. And at
if
any
we can
rate,
hold here
the numbers are going bit. Down, vaccines yep. are going up. Are you feeling that from businesses? Or are they just at the point where we're not going to make predictions because of the year we just had?
Nobody makes predictions.
Right, right.
Nobody does that anymore. Yeah. Nobody is a Nostradamus.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yes. It's helped that it's been really sunny out.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, like I've literally talked to people that is like the sun helps me. Mm-hmm. So it's helped that we've had these kind of positive movements and it's like the kind of the weather's been great. And,
And also, again, just that ice storm and how that how crises do right. kind of change our
people
perspective
have power
a little bit.
And exactly. internet at their
exactly.
house.
Exactly. I mean,
the
when
world
you're coming,
seems great right
when
now.
The bar is that low that like you flick the lights and they right. come on and you're so psyched about it.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Totally. It's easy to be in a good mood.
Right. I will commend the Canby community though for really like during the ice storm and post ice storm, their reaction of coming out and supporting small business was incredible. I've talked to multiple business owners that were really impressed, really grateful, and really hopeful about the response coming out the backside of the ice storm, about how quickly this community like returned to normal and returned to business and returned to spending dollars
yeah.
in their favorite local businesses. So to the Canby community, thank you. That's exactly what we're hoping for as the chamber. That's the mission.
Yeah.
Right. It's
yeah.
just to have locals supporting locals. Yeah. That's what it's all about. And And yeah, so I would say that business owners are cautiously optimistic.
Yeah.
News continues about access and production of the vaccine.
Yeah.
Which only, I think, lifts spirits because it seems like a pathway out the backside.
Yeah.
So as long as production and distribution continues and cases continue to diminish,
yeah,
and the talk of a regular school year in the fall continues and persists, yes, business yeah. owners are optimistic.
Yeah. Yeah.
With new challenges, but optimistic.
Yeah. I mean, there was uncertainty with the vaccine, right? It's a completely new vaccine, period. It's a new kind of vaccine. You know, right. We've never had an mRNA vaccine before. I am not a scientist. I have no idea how, what, 95% effectiveness.
I was an English major, so don't ask me an mRNA. Versus 92%
effectiveness or what right. that even means. Right. Like, does that mean the other 5% die? I don't know. Like,
right.
But when you do see the numbers for the number of people being vaccinated go up and the cases go down, I mean, right. that seems like pretty good evidence.
Well,
that
and
it's
evidence
doing
coming
job.
Out about how vaccines affect transmissibility.
Yeah.
That's the one
yeah.
that I get really optimistic about is that transmissibility goes down because I'm not confident that everybody's going to take the vaccine.
Yeah.
But if we can reduce transmissibility, between the two populations that might have to rub up against each other
right.
here for a while, I see a pathway forward.
Yeah, yeah, so. Absolutely. Well, my last question is a big one.
So oh, yeah.
Get ready. I'm not going to ask you to predict,
okay.
but just speculate with me a little bit, pontificate, if you will. Going forward, do you think that eventually, I'm not going to ask you to say when or exactly how what it'll look like, but eventually the pandemic will be a thing of history and will be more or less back to normal about what it was pre-pandemic? Or do you think that in terms of local businesses, the coronavirus has put some permanent changes that we will see going forward? And if so, what do you think those are? Things that will stay with us because they're positive.
Right.
Yeah.
I like that last caveat.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. Pandemics absolutely change us.
Yeah.
It's changed people's business models. It's
yeah.
changed the way they operate, some for better, some for worse. There's a lot of people that have changed their business model
right.
and won't go back because they actually prefer it.
Right.
It's really easy to become process complacent.
Yeah.
And to say that's our process and that's we do it because we do it and that's how we've always done it.
Right.
This has forced a shakeup that has forced business to look at their processes and evaluate it. And not all of them will be permanent. Not all of them were positive. Not all of them were negative.
Yeah.
It's fundamentally changed us and changed the way that business operates. You know, it'll be really interesting to see what, you know, we've talked about telecommuting for a long time.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of organizations that have been really reluctant to kind of adopt it as a policy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've just lived through a year of it. And from major tech companies
yeah.
to small offices, there's been plenty of companies that have remained profitable, remained functional,
yeah.
remained operable out the backside of this.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's just one issue. So what does that mean in terms of commercial office space?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, we don't know the impacts and the implications of some of the issues that we're just now kind of teasing our way through. So, yeah, there will be permanent impacts out of this. And there will be losses, but there will be gains,
yeah.
too. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's about as far into the crystal ball as I'll probably
yeah,
get.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's interesting when you think about the local impact because you think, okay, well, Canby doesn't have a lot of large, you know, commercial offices or mm-hmm. whatnot that would necessarily be impacted and potentially left empty by that. But what you were talking about a little bit earlier, if Canby's less of a bedroom community because they're not in Portland or Beaverton at their offices, that is something that, yeah, definitely changes the outlook of
right.
of Canby businesses going forward for a long time.
Exactly. I mean, if we don't have people commuting outside the community, like what do they do with their daytime dollars? That's actually a huge benefit to our retail, our grocery, our hospitality, our coffee, our, you know, our... but it also changes the face of childcare and educate, you know, like none of the issues that the chamber faces are simple.
Yeah.
Which is why we want to have relationships with the city and the school district and not-for-profits and businesses. Because you pull one thread in this giant woven tapestry of a community that we work in, and you don't know where that thread's going to go.
Yeah.
There's no easy answers, and we're here to puzzle it out with everybody. But I don't. It's too early to know yet.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, we'll see. We'll be here for it. Kyle Lang, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Before you go, you want to shout out the auction one more time and let folks know how they can check out what's going on there.
Absolutely. So the Canby Chamber auction is live now, and it is live till Saturday at 5 p.m. To take a look at what we have to offer, if you just text the word Canby to the number 71760.
Whoa, that's super cool.
You will get a web link right there, and you can log on and fill out your profile, and you'll get a bidder number, and you'll be able to browse and support local business, support the Canby Chamber, support all the things that we do. And thank you for being a member as well, Frankie.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, we love having you.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's what we got going on right now until Saturday. Oh, and join us Facebook, YouTube, or on CTV5 at 4 p.m. on Saturday.
If for no other reason than to see what this guy is wearing. So.
Right.
All right. Kyle, thanks again. Take care. Stay safe.
Thank you.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. I miss going to the Wild Hair. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hare and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart, and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby and Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.